Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 6, 2015. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV, happy Tuesday, everybody. I'm having some major technical difficulties here. Three machines, and it is whack-a-mole. So I don't even have a show put up for you or any articles to read. I'm not sure what I'm going to do here today, but hey. It's only Tuesday. I'm like probably months behind on sleep. And honestly, at this point, it's like, whatever. It's 55 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. Looks like it's going to pour with rain any second. So I really feel like going back to bed. But thank God I'm here. One of these days is going to come to an end. I would really like to do something other than get a show ready every morning and have to battle with these computers. At least when I'm not doing the show in the morning, it gives me a good 5 hours to battle with computers to get my, you know, snippet of things done versus being under the gun and having to get everything ready to rock and roll by 10 o'clock in the morning. That never works out. So, I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do today, but we had Brandon Turville on yesterday, so it was pretty awesome. Talked about Syria and Russia, some of the crap going on with the United States, South Carolina flooding, which looks like it was quite the mess, but let's take a look at what we talked about Friday. I have no idea. I don't remember, and I don't even know if I could get there, so might not even talk about that either. Oh, yeah, the wreck tennis. Mushroom batteries and styrofoam eating worms. And that's about all the research I've done for today's show as well. You can catch all my top stories in my feed. That's about all I'm going to do is read them because I just don't have any time to dedicate to doing any research right now because I'm in the middle of a lot of other projects that have nothing to do with doing my show. It's to do everybody else's shows. So here we go. Let's get internet through our light bulb. We've heard about that before. I know that they've been doing beta testing for a long time, over the last few years at least, at some of the airports. And I think Newark, New Jersey was one of them where they had those internet-enabled spying light bulbs. And they didn't actually call them internet-enabled light bulbs. They were the spy light bulbs where they could put a microphone and stuff into them and then catch whatever's going on in the ambient speech in the room. They could also put video cameras in them. Well, here you go. Now they're finally telling you, they're calling it Li-Fi. Here's why your future internet could come through your light bulb. The tungsten light bulb has served over the century or so that it was introduced, but its days are numbered now with the arrival of the LED, which consume a tenth of the power of incandescent bulbs and have a lifespan 30 times longer. Potential uses of LEDs are not limited to illumination. Smart lighting products are emerging that can offer various additional features, including linking your laptop or smartphone to the internet. Move over Wi-Fi. Li-Fi is here. Wireless communication with visible light, and we talked about that. That was being able to transfer data with light. Now, I honestly didn't realize that these light bulbs were using light to transfer the data. I had assumed that it was something that was integrated, like a wireless, and maybe there is, because there's got to be something to connect it to the internet. I assumed that there was something integrated, like a wireless radio, inside the light bulb, and then when the light bulb was screwed into the power source, obviously you were powering your wireless device, but it doesn't, it sounds like they're using light to transfer data and not 802.11. It's very confusing. Wireless communication with visible light is, in fact, not a new idea. Everyone knows about using smoke signals in on a desert island to try and capture attention. Perhaps less. It's really bright in here, did I tell you? And I'm only on half a cup of coffee. Perhaps less well known is that in the time of Napoleon, much of Europe was covered with official telegraphs, also otherwise known as the semaphore. See, now, I thought the semaphore was them with the flags, right? Wasn't that what that was? Alexander Graham Bell, inventor of the telephone, actually regarded the photophone as his most important invention, a device that uses a mirror to relay the vibrations caused by speech over a beam of light. Whoa, that was Graham Bell. In the same way that interrupting, modulating a plume of smoke can break it into parts that form an SOS message in Morse code, so can visible light communications, more affectionately known as Li-Fi, L-I-F-I, rapidly modulates the intensity of light to include rapidly modulates the intensity of a light to encode data as binary zeros and ones, but this does not mean that Li-Fi transceivers will flicker. The modulation will be too fast for the eye to see. Oh, great. So they'll be able to do more brainwashing techniques like they do with television and the flicker rate. Li-Fi versus Wi-Fi. An enormous and growing user demand for wireless data is placing huge pressure on existing Wi-Fi, which uses the radio and microwave frequency spectrum. And yes, if you didn't know that, your wireless router is at the same frequency as your microwave oven, which makes you wonder how safe Wi-Fi frequencies are, and that we sit in the middle of them all the time. 802.11, old school. I'm trying to remember. Let's think. 2.4 gigahertz is what a microwave works at, and 2.4 gigahertz was what this first 802.11b came out as. Then they jacked it up. I don't know, whatever all these new alphabet letters are, first B's. There's some crazy ones, and who knows what kind of upper limits there are now, because everyone's like come up with their own standards and stuff. But I know that 2.4 was the standard 802.11b wireless. And then they had 5 point something, maybe it was even 5 gigahertz. That was some of the new high spectrum speed wireless. And who even knows what it's at now? I mean, I haven't looked into wireless standards in quite a few years because it doesn't matter to me anymore. As long as it connects and it works, which seems to be quite a particular issue these days for computing. I don't care about the technologies anymore because I'm not selling it and I'm not doing end user support. But I don't know. It's gotten a lot less user-friendly for me. Let's just put it that way. All right, Li-Fi versus Wi-Fi. Blah, 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 blah. Yes, and it uses radio and microwave frequency spectrums. With exponential growth of mobile devices by 2019, more than 10 billion devices are expected to exchange around 35 quintillion. Yes, that is a 10 to the 18 power bytes of information each month. This will not be possible using existing wireless technology due to frequency congestion and electromagnetic interference. The problem is most acutely felt in public spaces and urban areas. I don't know if anybody cares, but wireless technology, one of the things about wireless that most people don't realize is that wireless is a shared infrastructure. So there's two ways that you can get data. One is over a shared infrastructure. So you have one pipe and everybody shares that one pipe, which means that if Johnny's playing video games or sucking live streaming videos, it's going to affect you getting to your webpage. The other way is where everybody gets full bandwidth by getting a dedicated time slice, let's say, and you end up with a full pipe, and then it just kind of does what we were talking about using light. It's not light, but it's using data. But it does something that's almost like, not quite, but kind of, I guess, if you look at it from a basic sense, it's kind of like a multiplex where anytime there's silence, you get your turn, and it orchestrates all these different connections, so everybody gets their turn and gets bandwidth. That's called a switched infrastructure. You won't get that on wireless. You'll get that on DSL. Anyway, and you won't get that on cable either. Cable is a shared infrastructure, not a dedicated. All right, let's go back to the story. Wow. Feels like Monday. Says this won't be possible due to existing technology. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah. It's felt in urban areas where many users try to share the limited capacity available from Wi-Fi transmitters or mobile networks on cell towers. And the fundamental communication principle is that the maximum data transfer possible within the electromagnetic frequency bandwidth is available. That didn't make any sense, but the radio frequency spectrum is heavily used and regulated, and there just isn't enough additional space to satisfy the growth in demand. So, Li-Fi has the potential to replace radio and microwave frequency Wi-Fi. Well, let's see. Where is the spectrum is what I want to know. Visible light spectrum is huge, and yes, we know that. We've talked about that. Oh, this is pretty interesting. Unused and unregulated capacity for communications. The light from LEDs can be modulated very quickly, data rates as high as 3.5 gigasecond using a single blue LED, or 1.7 gigasecond with white light have been demonstrated by researchers at the ERPCIRC-funded Ultra Parallel Visible Light Communications Program. This is insane. They're like using visible light spectrum for data transfer. I mean, this is like the orb that we looked at the other day, right? Someday your future communication will be holding the light orb for data transfer. Pretty much, it's shown people in this illustration, they have smart LED lighting in the room, and they're standing and sitting underneath these LED lights with all of their mobile devices and their PCs all connected to wireless. Wow, there'll be no getting away from the spying now. That's why they're getting rid of all the incandescent bulbs. I keep telling my husband, buy 100. I mean, it's probably too late now, but back a year or two ago, I was like, every time you go to the store, you better buy a package of incandescent light bulbs. All right. They're getting very expensive and hard to find. And those LEDs and the ultra compacts, actually, LEDs aren't really toxic. Those ultra compact, I don't know what they are. They're the fluorescent spirally little bulbs. Those things are toxic if they ever break. They're loaded with lead and who even knows? There's all kinds of like, there's a, I don't even know what's in there. There's some radioactive element in there and there's, who knows? I don't know. It's too fucking early. Don't look it up. Just look it up if you're concerned. But those new light bulbs are fucking toxic, and there's no recycling program that I've ever seen for them. So just chuck them in the garbage so then all that toxicity can go into the landfills. Incandescent bulbs didn't really cause any pollution, but hey, let's get rid of them all because they weren't good spy tools and, you know, inefficient carbon quotient. Let's throw it all out a window. Anyway, back to this. Unlike Wi-Fi transmitters, optical communications are well confined inside the walls of a room, and this confinement might seem to be a limitation for Li-Fi. So it's going to be room-contained wireless instead of being able to pick it up at the other end of your house. But it also offers the key advantage that it is very secure, and if the curtains are drawn, then nobody outside the room can eavesdrop. No, but anyone tapped into your Li-Fi network could be sucking data right out of your network. I'm assuming that somehow this Li-Fi must be connected then to a router that goes to the internet. And on that router, there probably is some sort of either wireless connector or something. I don't know. I don't know enough about this technology, but this is pretty freaky. If every LED light bulb in your house can be a connection to the internet, and some freak could be watching your kid get dressed through the light bulb. How are you ever even going to know? Electronics have gotten so small. How are you even going to know if there's a microphone and a camera inside your light bulb. I mean, they could be manufacturing them that way out of the gate. Just saying. This, I don't like this at all. And they're going to tell you it's so great because it's ubiquitous. It just works right into our infrastructure. No one will even know it's there. Look at it. It's like the internet of things. We now have the internet on light bulbs that can connect to all the objects in your house. Yes, it's good for you. Internet everywhere. For everybody. An array of light sources in the ceiling could send different signals to different users. And the transmitter power can be localized, more efficiently used, and won't interfere with adjacent Li-Fi sources. Now, that also is odd. I don't know how they're doing that. I need to read more about this technology. So, does each user get a frequency or something? I don't know how they could use different signals to different users. Indeed, and then what are we doing? We have some sort of optical router? I guess I don't understand how this is really mind-bending, especially this early in the morning. Indeed, the lack of radio frequency interference is another advantage over Wi-Fi. Visible light communication is intrinsically safe and could end the need for travelers to switch devices to flight mode. A further advantage of Li-Fi is that it can use existing power lines as LED lighting, so no new infrastructure is needed. And the Internet of Things. Yes, we knew that was coming. The Internet of Things is an ambitious vision. Yeah, it's a horrifying Orwellian vision. They're going to have computers stitched into the material that makes up your clothing. The Internet of Things. They're already working on that, by the way. I pulled some stories when I did the story last week, and we talked about the Internet of Things. After the show, I'd mentioned the Internet-enabled clothing for the Android Wear. I mean, that's kind of where this whole Android Wear is leading to. And I found a couple good stories about them creating internet-enabled clothes. And they literally are weaving very small, and I don't know if they're nanowires or what they are, but they're weaving it right into the fabric of clothing. The Internet of Things is an ambitious vision of a hyper-connected world of objects. Yeah, remember that we read they're calling them enchanted objects. How fitting is that? Yes, the enchanted objects dancing around your room when you're not looking and rummaging through your underwear drawer when you're not home. The Internet of Things is an ambitious vision of a hyper-connected world of objects autonomously communicating with each other. Oh, so the lamp is friends with my alarm clock. Oh, now this stuff gets me upset. For example, your fridge might inform your smartphone that you just ate a chocolate donut and you weren't supposed to. No, I just made that up. But your fridge will be tattletaling on you to your doctor. For example, your fridge might inform your smartphone that you've run out of milk. And it might even order it for you. Sensors in your car will directly alert you through your smartphone that your tires are too worn or have low pressure. Gee, that's what dummy gauges are for, right? On your dashboard. I don't need my car getting obnoxious about it. Hey, this is hurting my rear quarter panel by running on a low tire here. Probably going to have attitude, too. Maybe you could program attitude into your car. Given the number of things that can be fitted with sensors and controllers and then network-enabled and connected, the bandwidth, yes, which means our entire world. I mean, do you understand that's the grid? Do you understand the cage is done? this cage. We literally are in a mouse cage, and every day they come out with new technology. All those little slats between the wires that are crisscrossed gets tinier and tinier until it gets to the fact where it's actually embedding little microsensors into every cell and then our DNA strand. So everything, anything we do, we speak, we eat, we anything, any bit of life is going to be communicated somewhere into some mega database, log bagged and tagged for future use, for manipulation and control. Anyway, given the number of things that can be fitted with sensors and controllers and then network-enabled and connected, the bandwidth needed for all of these devices to communicate is vast. The industry monitor Gartner, and if you ever want to find out about a business segment, let's say, or future predictions for what, let's say, a business idea or a technology, what their thoughts are, like for Gartner does the magic quadrants, they call them, and that's kind of their tailored research that they've been known for in the business world, and they'll always provide this magic quadrant study of where the technology is heading and what the sales look like. And we used to, every year, we would pull up, and I think you actually got to pay for them too. They're pretty expensive, but we would get the Gartner quadrants, the magic quadrants for networking and technologies. Anyway, Gartner predicts that 25 billion with a B devices will be connected by just 5 years from now, 2020. And given that most of this information needs to be transferred only a short distance, Wi-Fi is an attractive and perhaps the only solution to making this a reality. Several companies have already begun offering products for visible light communications. Like, how insane is this? The LI First, which is LI-1ST, it's spelled LI First from Pure Li-Fi, based in Edinburgh, offers a simple plug-and-play solution for secure wireless point-to-point internet access with a capacity of 11.5 meg. So that is, you have to admit, it's kind of slow, but it might not be slow for your refrigerator. With a capacity of 11.5 meg, comparable to first-generation Wi-Fi. And that is true. It was 802.11 wireless was... I want to say 11 meg, but I don't think so. I don't know. I don't remember. 802.11. 802.11b. I don't know. It escapes me right now. That was so long ago. Oh, the joys of getting old and being half asleep. Anyway, point-to-point internet access with a capacity of 11.5 megabits per second. Compared to first generation Wi-Fi, another is OLED, like as in an OLED, an OLED for a monitor, OLEDcom, OLED from France, which exploits the safe non-radio frequency nature of Li-Fi with installations in hospitals. There are still many technological challenges to tackle, but the first steps have already been taken to make Li-Fi a reality. And the future of your light switch will turn on much more than just illumination. So I guess we're going to have to dig into this a little more. This is already the second or the third story we've come across. I remember, too, if you guys remember those spy street lamps. That was when I first started reading about Li-Fi. And I don't know if the spy street lamps actually had one of those Li-Fi bulbs in it. But I know that they had embedded microphones and cameras into the street lamps. And then shortly thereafter, I had read about the Newark, New Jersey, Newark Airport has already having the spy light bulbs in them. So, but I don't know. I need to really look into the technicals, because trying to wrap my mind around how they're dedicating bandwidth through light frequencies is just, you know, coming from a world of standard networking, it's really hard to imagine being able to transfer information over light, but I guess it's already happening. All right, I guess we're going to do some technology stories today because I had a couple good ones, some of the mad science gone mad technology. Here, this one, this new smart glove can turn sign language into text and speech. Yes, so much for the dude who was pretending to be a sign language translator in Africa at Obama's big, I don't even remember what they were in Africa for. Was it when Mandela died, maybe? And they had the sign language interpreter that was right next to Obama. And then we found out after the fact that the sign language interpreter was full of shit and he wasn't really signing. He was just making stuff up and he was actually some schizophrenic dude who'd been taking medication. I don't know. That whole story was weird. But, well, this will fix that. This new smart glove can turn sign language into text and speech. So no more pretending you know sign language. You better know it because it'll type out then next to you on a big screen for everyone to see. Sign language has helped the hearing impaired communicate for many centuries and way before it was formalized and officially recognized. But this long-standing language of gestures has now been given a 21st century technological upgrade. And this is, of course, out of Saudi Arabia. Saudi designer and media artist Hadil Ayyub has invented a smart glove that recognizes hand movements and converts them into relevant text. Much like Google's Translate, it can give anyone a basic grasp of a foreign language in an instant. This glove is designed to help sign language users make themselves understood by those who usually can't interpret it. Yeah, this would totally thwart posers like the sign language guy. Actually, Obama, oh no, but he'd have to know sign language. Yeah, but you know what? If the dude didn't know, I mean, they would have known right away because it came out after the fact. Like, sign language people are coming out going, that guy was just signing garbage. It didn't mean anything. Of course, everyone thought it did, but this would give it away immediately. It says there are 5 flex sensors that sit on the fingers, monitoring how they're being manipulated, while an accelerometer integrated into the fabric of the glove figures out how the hand is being held and the direction in which it's pointing. Wow, this is pretty damn high tech. They might as well integrate some Wi-Fi into it, too, so you could sign language and send it over your light network. Through 3 successive prototypes, the glove has been made thinner, lighter, and faster. It looks like an isotoner, actually. It's been made thinner, lighter, and faster. And the latest version includes a text-to-speech chip to vocalize the words as they're signed. So it doesn't even have to be spit out to a large screen TV for everyone to read. Now it has a text-to-speech chip in the hand, so your hand will talk as you're doing the sign language. Wow, this is really messed up. It says Ayyub has also created a computer application. Oh, well, here we go, for displaying the signed words and phrases on a screen. And eventually she wants to create a mobile app so the same effect can be seen on a smartphone or a tablet. And once Wi-Fi, so they're talking about doing Wi-Fi. I bet you they'll integrate Wi-Fi at some point. Once Wi-Fi is incorporated, which is scheduled for the next prototype, the glove could also be used to send texts and emails in sign language. The addition of a motion controller in the 4th version of the glove should also add to its accuracy. While other researchers have worked on similar projects in the past, Ayyub says that her invention is the lightest and the most practical yet, and she also plans for a version for kids and wants to incorporate multilingual. That's what I was thinking. How cool would that be if it did all their languages too? Multilingual capabilities into the device so that speakers of sign language are able to communicate in whatever tongue they choose. right? So you're doing sign language, but you're in France, and your little text-to-speech chip is going to spit out what you're trying to say. I mean, how cool is that? I spilled my coffee all over my leg. All right. That's what happens when I'm holding a cup and trying to talk with my hands. I'm trying to do sign language. The fourth prototype is expected to cost in the region of £255, which is equivalent to about $386. So it's pretty inexpensive, too, for being so high tech. And Ayub has already been approached by several companies interested in manufacturing it. I bet she is. She's hoping that the costs are eventually picked up by schools and companies buying the gloves for students and staff. And she actually has her own blog. Here actually is another story that I had queued up from a few days ago. And what's weird is this must be an update to the story because it's dated today. And I literally posted the story a couple days ago. So I'm thinking that this is an update to the story. It was about making mini brains and they are alive. But now we find out that they can make them for just 25 cents. Now, we've talked about that, Johnny. Johnny engineering deadly viruses in his garage. And then we found out now with lasers coming here in the very near future, Johnny might be able to create nuclear fission in his garage too with just a few little bits of light. Well, now living mini brains that cost just 25 cents could replace animal testing. So little Johnny could use his allowance money and buy himself a bunch of mini brains to experiment with. Working miniature brains with functioning nervous tissue could easily and inexpensively be used for testing and biomedical research, possibly lessening the reliance on animals, researchers say. And of course, I'd be all for that. Animal testing to me is one of the most horrifying things, and I see you and me in that seat here in the near future. Anybody who can do that to another living creature has some definite humanity fiber missing, okay? Every little creature has a little personality, and every little creature deserves to live life, not be tortured and strapped down to have shit acid spewed into their eyes to see what would happen, or probes jammed into their brains, or sections of their brains cut out to see how much they could take out before you fall down. And there is such a horrifying history of what humans have done to other creatures. So I have to say, I would totally be all for these mini brains grown in petri dishes for a quarter. What? Where's the value to life, though? We're growing living neurological brain tissue in a petri dish and selling it for a quarter. I mean, it really has got to make you think. According to the team behind the mini brains, which are functional in that they are an electrically active sphere of central nervous system tissue, which makes you also wonder where it came from. Is that from aborted fetuses? Maybe some of the initial stem cells are. The mini brains could be ideal for testing things such as drug research, neural tissue implants, which we're going to talk about some of those, or experiments with stem cells. And the process for building them is described in a new paper by researchers from Brown University in the United States. Quote, we think this is a way to have a better in vitro lab model that can then maybe reduce animal use. And remember, DARPA was also developing a body on a chip. I thought the brain was one of those parts. A lot of the work that's done right now is two-dimensional culture But this is an alternative that is much more relevant to the in vivo scenario. Mini brains, which do not have the capacity to think like a full-sized brain, can be made from existing living tissue. According to researchers, even a small sample of living tissue taken from a what? A rodent. So, hey, to save a million rodents, we'll have to take some brain tissue from one rodent. I guess it's better than aborted fetuses. But, you know, I thought they were able, and they are, to take skin cells and coax them. Skin cells, coax them as a stem, because you can get stem cells from your skin, and then coax them into turning into whatever type of stem cells they need. They could turn them into brain cells. So I'm not sure why they're taking rodent cells. But it's enough to make thousands of mini brains through a process of isolating and concentrating the cells in a centrifuge and then seeding a cell culture. The brain tissue sphere starts to form just one day after the cultures are seeded, with the neural network of the full mini brain only taking 2 to 3 weeks to develop. Guys, this is just so horrifying. Someday we're going to find out that there's a big, what used to be a server room with all these little mini brains that are connected together in this massive grid. The big Jabba the Hutt. The resulting brains, which only measure 1/3 of a millimeter in diameter, would cost approximately 25 U.S. cents to make, meaning that they could offer a cheap and practical 3D testbed for laboratory purposes. Oh my God, this guy's name is great. The materials are easy to get, and the mini brains are simple to make, says co-lead author Yu-Ting Dingle. We could allow all kinds of labs to do this research. The researchers developed the mini brains for their own research testing, where they're looking at such areas such as neural cell transplantation and studying how adult neural stem cells develop. But they could also be purchased for use by researchers in a wide range of biomedical areas, opening up neural testbed opportunities for those who aren't fully up on neuroscience or who do not possess the cell culture equipment needed to whip up a mini brain. If you are that person in a lab, we think you shouldn't have to equip yourself with a microelectronics facility, and you shouldn't have to do embryonic dissections, in order to generate an in vitro model of the brain. So there you go. Let's create mini brains everywhere. And what's really horrifying about this, and I got to tell you, my internet connection, I am working. Yes, Jane, that is the name. You tingle. I had to pause on that one for a second and collect myself. I have been having such horrifying trouble with my internet here. And I am in the process. I'm going to have to boost my connection. And because I don't know what's going on here, but I really cannot do much of anything as far as streaming on these computers. But we're going to give this a shot, but I'm not going to get upset if it doesn't work, right? We've just been unable to play videos. But here's a new one about the brain net that they've been working on. And, you know, just this stuff is very scary to me because people still think that this is all stuff of science fiction, and absolutely is not. This is going on today, and it's being funded by not only institutions around the globe, but remember, a lot of that is money that's coming from government organizations and high-powered organizations. Hey, I connected just fine and I don't have an echo. All right, well, let's see. Collective brain experiments offer exciting potential, say researchers. Collective brains, yes. In a big room. And it dropped me. Did you hear that? And I think I'm back. All right. Well, that was weird. As soon as the video started playing, it dumped the call. So wait, we'll try one more time. All right. I'm connected again. Let me just back this up now, that it's spooled. Look at, hold on. Let's check the volume. I have no volume now.
That's according to researchers at Toronto's Rotman Research Institute. They fitted Muse EEG headbands to 500 visitors.
Oh, well. Guess I won't get to share this one either. This is pretty freaky. All these people have these now EEG headbands on, which is, you know, how they're doing some of the mind-controlled... they do the mind-controlled, like, drones. What the fuck is this feedback now? Come on. All right, I'm going to try this one. All right, forget it. Never mind. You know, it's just incredible how this happens because, oh, now my whole machine is locked. What is going on? I swear to God, you know, when I put a sniffer on my network the other day, all I kept seeing was traffic coming. Oh, and there we go. I don't know if I'm on air. Oh, I was trying to get the call back. Here we go. Now let's... I can't even kill it. The other day, I put a sniffer on my network, and I was seeing all this traffic coming in from Ukraine. And it was sneaking in through browsers. It was sneaking in through through Skype, too. So, I don't know. We're probably all compromised by Ukrainian hackers that McCain paid. All right, skip it. I guess we'll... I won't be able to do that one. Well, that really sucks that I can't play video clips at all anymore. It doesn't give me a break. Usually it allows me to get my next story ready to rock and roll. All right, well, there's a couple more then. I don't know if I really want to talk any more about the brain then, since I can't really make my connecting points. So let's talk about kicking robots. How's that? I'm all for kicking robots. What about you? This actually made me laugh. You guys know my personal feelings about robots. It's probably going to come back and haunt me someday that I've said, kill all robots on the air. This is out of phys.org. Incident of drunk man kicking humanoid robot raises legal questions. A few weeks ago, a drunk man in Japan was arrested for kicking a humanoid robot that was stationed as a greeter at SoftBank Corp, which develops robots. I could see them getting him for, like, destruction of property, but beyond that, according to the police report, the man said he was angry at the attitude of one of the store clerks, and because the Pepper robot now moves more slowly and it is internal it now moves more slowly and its internal computer system may have been damaged. So he kicked the shit out of one of those Pepper bots, which they're like those white Japanese robots, got a little tablet on its chest, and they're rolling them out to everybody. Under current Japanese law, the man can be charged with damage to property, but they can't charge him with injury, because that is a charge reserved for humans. Well, phew-foof. Dr. Yuxuan Hohaswan Wang, who is the co-founder of the robotlaw.asia initiative. Are they really trying to create robot laws? Robolaw.asia initiative at Peking University in China. And a former researcher of the Humanoid Robotic Institute at Waseda University in Japan thinks that a better charge lies somewhere in between. Wang is advocating for special robot laws to address the unique nature of human-robot interactions. He argues that humans perceive highly intelligent social robots like Pepper, which can read your emotions differently than normal machines. We view them more like pets. And so the inappropriate treatment of robots by humans should be handled with this in mind. Oh my God, we're going to give them rights. Oh, this is just such a scary road we are marching down. He says, the biggest moral concern. Yes, we're going to, you know, there are no morals right now with mad science gone mad, but we're going to worry about the morals for interacting with robots, our future overlords. The biggest moral concern, Wang explains, is that the current laws, quote, do not help human beings to project their empathy while interacting with humanoid robots. Oh, so without projecting our empathy, right, that must make us psychopaths. Yeah, I'm going to be psychopathic on the first robot that tries to involve itself in my life. He explains the problem in greater detail in review at the Tech and Law Center website. We'll read a little bit of this. This incident has been received with immense scrutiny from the public as it is regarding a human-like sociable machine that was inappropriately treated, says Wang. And if the object had been an ATM or a vehicle, the moral impact would have been much less. Yes, go around beating up ATMs. Or kicking car tires. But, you know, think about it. What are we going to do when we all have smart cars? You get pissed off and you slam the door too hard. Or you punch the dashboard. You're going to get car abuse? Oh, my God. Enchanted objects get rights. It says if the object had been an ATM or a vehicle, the moral impact would have been much less. As an evolved set of ethical principles of sophisticated and intelligent machinery like Pepper have yet to be developed. To working to develop such ethical principles, Wang has previously proposed that humanoid robots should have a legal status that is different than that of normal machines. He suggests that humanoid robots be legally regarded as a, quote, third existence, unquote, in contrast to the status of humans as the first existence and our normal machines and properties as second existence. This distinction would allow for special treatment of human-robot incidents, which Wang believes will be essential in the future. Why? Because there's going to be a lot of people like me kicking the shit out of robots, stabbing them in the eye. They're spying eyeballs. Oh, my God. I mean, Atlas, warm and fuzzy Atlas? I don't think so. K5, like the, what are they called? Oh, Exterminate from Doctor Who. No, no, thank you. In regards to the Pepper incident, the humanoid robot Pepper is recognized as an, quote, object of law under the current Japanese legal system, Wang told Phys.org. And therefore, it is not possible to apply the Article 204, which is injury, to the Japanese Penal Code. On the contrary, the man could be sued under Article 234-2, which is obstruction of business by damaging a computer, or Article 261, which is damage to property, And as for civil law, based on Article 709, which is damages in torts, Pepper's owner, SoftBank, can claim economical compensation from the man regarding any damages resulting as a consequence of the attacked Pepper robot. And in my personal opinion, that is just fine. Okay, Pepper is nothing more than a bucket of bolts. And so Pepper should not have any more rights than the multiple buckets of bolts that are sitting on my desk right now. So in the near future, we might sense the problem if we still keep the second existence policy for dealing with sophisticated human robots, since it violates our common sense for interacting with them. Whether a robot can be legally, quote-unquote, injured or not is debatable and raises questions of what exactly robot laws should look like. And based on his research, Wang has a proposal, has proposed two special regulations for robots. First is called the, quote, Humanoid Morality Act, unquote, which would define a proper relationship between humans and robots. And yeah, I saw a story about Pepper the other day. People were all afraid that Pepper was going to be sexual objects for people who purchased them, and they're warning everyone. So that could have something to do with this morality clause, which would define the proper relationship between humans and robots, including the use of coercive power to constrain unethical applications. Second would be a quote-unquote Robot Safety Governance Act, which would extend current machine safety regulations to protect the safety of both humans and robots. Wang also cautions against overregulation, calling the red flag laws implemented in the UK in the 19th century for operating the first automobiles. These overly conservative laws required a flagman to walk in front of every car to warn pedestrians of a coming vehicle, and the laws had unintended consequences of hindering innovation. But like the automobiles of the late 19th century, today's robots are rapidly growing technologies that have the potential to lethally harm humans. Really? And for this reason, Wang believes that legislators today face a similar dilemma of finding the right balance between protection and innovation. I just can't believe that we are even having the discussion about future morals and ethics in regards to dealing with robots. I mean, honestly, they're a bucket of bolts. I don't think any bucket of bolts deserves to have any type of rights. Here we go. This one, actually, about having sex with Pepper came out of RT. Sex off! Owners of the first humanoid robot sign agreement to not have sex with it. And this is that same robot, by the way. A Japanese-based company named SoftBank, which has created Pepper the Robot, has forced customers to sign a document forbidding its owners from using the humanoid for sexual purposes, as well as creating sexy applications. Even after having paid nearly $2,000 for the robots, users may have to return Pepper to its makers should they get too personal with the emotional artificial being. The clause reads that Pepper must not be used, quote, for sexual activity and actions for the purpose of indecent acts or acts for the purpose of meeting and dating and making acquaintances of the opposite sex, unquote. Incidentally, the child size robot has already fallen victim to a hacker prank, receiving a pair of virtual breasts on its touchscreen. Ha ha ha! The female developer who reprogrammed the robot to shake its hips and moan when its breasts were touched called it Pepeye, P-E-P-P-A-I, a mix of the brand name and the Japanese word for breasts, and says she has done it, quote, for the purpose of testing sexual harassment. Pepper is now available for use at home, though people have found that communication is really her only asset, as her domestic skills, such as cleaning and cooking, are severely lacking. So look out, Jibo's got some competition in Japan. Pepper is a social robot able to converse with you, recognize and react to your emotions, move and live autonomously, says the developer's website. And yeah, that's the one thing that's different between Pepper and Jibo. Jibo just has to sit on a shelf. Pepper actually has locomotion. Experts warn that with creations that are more advanced than Pepper, humanity will enter an entirely new territory regarding ethics and legal issues. Quote, soon there will be realistic humanoid robots with AI, says Professor Adrian Dan Chiok, who teaches robotics at the London City University. For example, does sex with a robot when you are married mean you are cheating, he stated. Chiok believes it is pointless to try and stop humans from falling in love with robots and claims that 60% of people could in fact fall in love with an artificial being. What? Oh my God! So there's your problem to overpopulation, and they'll just fix the eugenics issue. Have everybody fall in love with robots. Says he told the Daily Mail that we can fall in love with robots, and we think that they are alive because we have that empathy that is often extended to non-human things like animals and even teddy bears, unquote. Put on a seatbelt. The reality gets weirder every freaking day. So make sure you get your Pepper and you ink your non-sex agreement with SoftBank. All right, guys, well, we made it. We got about 5 seconds left. Make sure you stick around. Mr. Kevin Blanche is up next. Game On with Ron at 7 p.m. Eastern, live at 9, live primer time with the boys, Michael and Nick. 10 p.m. Eastern tonight, we have Geoengineering Watch with Dane this week's show, and 11, Antimedia Radio with S.M. Gibson. All right, guys, make sure you stick around today. Have an awesome Tuesday.